Tango Tango Papa 2075, September 3rd, 2021.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you from Fort Worth area, Texas. So, I think it's been about a month since the last podcast. Of course, I took my time off at the end of August. Came back to work. Actually, it was late on the 1st. Went ahead and came back to work. I could have gotten up early on the 2nd, and the problem was I had a load that picked up in Carthage, Missouri at 6 a.m., and so, you know, I could have tried to sleep a little bit and then drive to Carthage and try to get there by 5 a.m., get there an hour ahead. So it was just easier. I left home. It was about 10 o'clock on the 1st in the evening. And got to Carthage, I don't know, it was maybe a little bit before midnight or right around midnight. I checked in, and then I got to sleep for about 5 hours or so, 5.5 hours, and then they had me back into the door. And so that actually worked out better than trying to sleep and then get up really early. So then try to scurry around. You know, because I try to load everything in the truck that I can, but, you know, so I don't have to do everything at the last minute. But it's still, there's still always things that I need to put in the truck and things that I need to think of. And, you know, so it's better if I can sort of take my time to do that. And then I can kind of remember to do everything I want to do. So I was quite busy, actually, over the, certainly while I was home. I had a dental cleaning appointment. I have one of those every 3 months with, you know, I alternate between my regular dentist and a periodontist. Every 3 months I get my teeth cleaned. So far, that's stabilized, and it's kind of remaining stable, which I, you know, that's the whole point. So I did that, and then I noticed, I don't know, over the past couple of months, I've kind of noticed that my the vision in my left eye isn't what it used to be. And so I started, you know, I got the idea I probably have a, you know, because I'd been told at one point that I had the beginnings of cataracts, and this has been maybe a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And, but, you know, I started thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe the thing's advancing in my left eye. And so I started watching a bunch of YouTube videos, and seems that I had a lot of the symptoms, you know, in this left eye. It's kind of hard. Well, it's sort of like a haze over the eye. The contrast isn't as good. You know, it doesn't do very well with glare. If I compare eyes, the color is off. You know, if I look at, you know, I'm like right now, I'm looking out the front of the truck's windshield, and if I kind of blink one eye and then blink the other, you know, while leaving the other one open, the right one it's a brighter image and it's more colorful. The left one is more of a, you know, by an immediate comparison like that, the left image is more of yellowed. So, you know. But in any case, I made an appointment with an ophthalmologist, this ophthalmology practice, And, you know, after I'd done some research, you know, because they have a, you know, YouTube channel with lots of videos on it, and, you know, and they've got all the latest and greatest in technology, and, you know, they really seem like they're, you know, kind of know what's going on. So I was able to make an appointment with them, and so starting out, I had, you know, you got to make an appointment with one of their optometrists. There's at least one ophthalmologist, and then that kind of, you know, his name's on the building. And then, you know, he's got at least two optometrists working for him. And, you know, so in any case, I was able to make, you know, made that appointment and go to the appointment while I was home this last time. And I was right. I do have the, you know, kind of an advancing cataract in my left eye. And so I'm made the decision that I am going to go ahead and get cataract surgery at some point in the future. You know, probably, you know, I'd say right now I'm thinking about maybe in December when I take my vacation would be a good time to do that. So, but I'm kind of left with a dilemma. I'm struggling with this, you know, what to do, how to handle this. Because, you know, for one thing, they can do both eyes at the same time. And I'm getting some pressure from a friend and then pressure from my mom. You don't do those at the same time. What if they mess up? You want to do them one at a time. And, of course, that's what they've traditionally done is one at a time, but they can do both of them at the same time. You know, like with LASIK, they do both eyes at the same time. So there's really no reason why they can't, you know, because the cataract surgery has become far less invasive than it once was, and it, therefore there's less healing time with it, and it's become a, you know, it's become more sophisticated over time. So that's one little dilemma. Another one, you know, and of course I'm going to pay for it out of my pocket, even though, you know, I could be on Medicare at this point. I'm not. I'm not signing up for it until I actually quit and I no longer, you know, until I actually determine that I'm going to quit. I'll keep my company health insurance up, and, you know, and then at some point I'll go ahead and sign up for Medicare. Whenever I think I'm going to actually retire, because I want to have a plan in place, but when I sign up for Medicare, so I don't have to pay a penalty. So, but right now it's really cheaper for me to keep my company Blue Cross Blue Shield. So, in any case, the real dilemma is which lens to choose. Should I go with just a traditional straight, you know, it's like a monofocular lens that just, it's kind of set for distance, and then of course you must use reading glasses, or should I go for one of the premium lenses? You know, and so, you know, nowadays they've got these, they're called trifocal lenses, and they actually have, they split the light three different ways. And you got three different, they actually focus three separate images on the retina. One of them is a distant image. One of them is set for intermediate, being, you know, maybe like 5, 6, 7, 8 feet away. And then the other one is set for close-up vision. And so all three of those images are projected on the back of the eye. Now, that works. You know, it's up to the brain to sort of adapt to that. And, you know, I guess with many people it will adapt to that. But some people have problems with it. And everyone will end up seeing visual artifacts at night, like circles or halos around points of light, you know, like car lights or, you know, brake lights at night is when they see those. So, you know, and they can see some other, you know, there are other visual artifacts. So, you know, so it does take some adaptation time to use these things, you know, kind of get used to them. And some people just can't get used to them. So how do you know if you're one of the people that can handle it? Yeah, that's a good question. I don't, you know, so it's possible that I could try to get some, there are multifocal contact lenses. So I might try that to see how well I'm able to adapt to multifocal contact lenses. And then obviously if I can adapt to multifocal contact lenses, then I would say that I could kind of handle the multifocal intraocular lens replacements. So now there are, you know, these are premium, so-called premium lenses, and a lot of people swear by them. Now there's another thing that's been around for a while called a crystal lens. That it, and the idea with it is it's more flexible. So now the way I've had it, that I've seen it described, you know, what your normal lens, let's say when you're in your up till about, you know, maybe age 40, depending on the person, the lens itself is clear and it's flexible, the natural lens. Your natural biological lens is just kind of a clear thing. It's very flexible. And so when you're looking off in the distance, the thing is more flat. But then whenever the you look up close at something, then there's muscles around that lens, and it squeezes it, and it makes it focus up close. And so you don't even think about it. You're not even aware that that's going on. But of course, once you get, depending on the person, you get to about age 40 or so, or maybe even before or a little after, what ends up happening, the lens itself starts to become more rigid, and the muscles just can't squeeze it as well. And so then you start getting what's called presbyopia, where you can't see close up very well, and you start to need reading glasses. And then, of course, you've got the problem, you know, I've had used reading glasses for quite some time now, but then now the problem I have is, especially with this left eye, the lens in the left eye is starting to really kind of get cloudy. You know, kind of a, you know, and that sort of makes things look blurry, even with correction. I got my contact lenses in right now, and I'm looking out the windshield of the truck, and there's this tree out there. So if I look at it with my left eye, I can actually see the leaves on the tree. But with my right eye, I can't really see the individual leaves. It just kind of all looks sort of blurry. You know, and the image itself is more yellowish, you know, if I compare it to the right, the image produced by the right eye. So, you know, and that's just, you know, part of the problem, you know, with once you get, you know, you start getting a cataract, then you've got, you know, it just gets progressively worse over time. So, I've got to decide what to do about lenses. Am I going to get, you know, try to go with some sort of a premium lens, like this crystal lens? The idea with it is that the little muscles can kind of force that thing to focus a little bit, so it's set for distance, but it can also function for intermediate and maybe a little bit of close up, but you're probably still going to need reading glasses. But one of the big advantages with the crystal lens is that there are no visual artifacts at night, Whereas with the multifocal lenses, it's 100% of people are going to have visual artifacts. I don't know. I think probably what I'll do is try to see if I can get my hands on some multifocal lenses, contact lenses, and then try those and see if those work for me. Because I should have similar visual artifacts, I would think. See if I can deal with that, my brain can adapt to it, and if it can, then the multifocal, there's a lens that they like called Panoptics, and see if that one, if that one might be the greatest thing since sliced bread, if my brain is able to adapt to it. And if I can tolerate the visual artifacts that are guaranteed with it, they're guaranteed to happen. So, but with the Panoptics, if you can adapt to it, then you've got distance vision, you've got intermediate vision, and you've got close-up vision all in one lens. So, it has, with every advantage, there's disadvantages. Now, of course, with a traditional monofocal lens, let's say your grandma has or whatever, a traditional monofocal lens is just, it's set for distance, and you will have to use reading glasses in order to see close up. And that's just the way those things work. The thing with the traditional monofocal lens is the fact that the big advantage is that there are no visual artifacts. So, but I think the crystal lens might be a good compromise. So I don't know. I need to kind of decide, and I've just taken as much time as I want, but I do think I'm going to try to do this while I am taking my Christmas vacation. So we'll see what happens. So but I did that. Of course, while I was home, I went ahead and did the mowing. Probably have to maybe have to do that again when I go home next time. It just kind of depends on if it rains or how much it rains. I did set up, they're supposed to be coming and pump my septic tank out. I thought that they were going to do it, but I guess there was some kind of miscommunication either on their part or my part. So the day I thought they were coming, they didn't show up, and so I called them, and he hadn't put me on the schedule like I thought he did, but oh well. But they're gonna do that at some point while I'm gone, and then they can just call me, and I pay them by the credit, just pay them with a credit card over the phone. So. Kind of slowly getting things done with the house that I want. I also want to, maybe the next time I'm home, get someone to bring some gravel and spread it out and kind of on my driveway again. It's time for more gravel. That happens about every 4 or 5 years or so, 5, 6 years. It just depends. Then, I also need to get someone out there and do some tree trimming. So, those things can, it's just a matter of getting somebody out there, and that sometimes that's easier said than done. But I'm kind of slowly getting, all those things done. Now, I did sign up for Social Security. And so, actually, I I guess whenever I meet you, because you sign up online and you go through this long, kind of a lengthy application, and in one of the places there's this check mark and you say, well, I want the thing to start as soon as possible. And then somewhere else you can tell them the month that you want it to start. And so I wasn't sure, because my birthday is April the 3rd, so I wasn't sure if it would start in June or if I should just kind of, wasn't sure how that worked, because they want you to be, you know, your birthday plus 2 months, in my case, 66 plus 2 months. So I was 66 on April the 3rd. So I wasn't sure, and so I said, I think I said I wanted it to start in September. So I had a conflict in the Social Security application. So I got this call, you know, and it said private number, and I don't answer when it says private number, or, you know, if it's some number I don't recognize, generally, unless I'm expecting a call, I just kind of reject it. So what happened, I did answer it, and it was this woman with a Mexican accent. It was a very clear line, and I pretended like I got disconnected. I said, hello, hello, and then I hung up. Well, it immediately rang again, and so I thought, well, I'd better answer it. And so I did, and it turned out it was a woman from Social Security. And she explained to me, she said that I had a conflict on my application, and when did I want it to actually start? Did I want to start receiving checks in June, which were already passed, or did I want it to start when I said in September? And I kind of verified with her that there was no penalty if I started in June, which were passed. So I said, yeah, let's go ahead and just start it for June. And so they paid me, you know, and it wasn't, she said, it'll start be on the 8th. You'll start getting paid on the 8th. So they paid me for June, July, and August, because it's always a month behind. So I got this kind of sizable back pay, like $6,500 and change, which covers 3 months, so June, July, and August. And it was in today, you know, I looked at my, you know, because I look at my bank account all the time, and it was in today's, you know, it was there this morning, so it came overnight. And she said, well, normally it's, you get paid on, from Social Security, you get paid on the second Wednesday of the month. So in this case, the second Wednesday would have been Wednesday, September 8th. But they went ahead and paid it early, so whatever. I have it set up to go into a savings account. And so that's where it went, right into the savings account. And so that was kind of a pleasant surprise. And so, you know, each month it's going to, the amount is going to go into the savings account. And, so that's that. That's actually set up now. There is going to be some kind of tax consequence. And I don't know if I can kind of figure out the tax consequence with the tax, like TurboTax. I'm probably not, because I don't have, you know, the TurboTax that I have is for last year or for 2021, and I'd actually need the one for 2022 in order to put it in there and put all the correct numbers in there to see what kind of tax consequence there's going to be. But I do know there's going to be some tax consequences, and I'll just, you know, kind of deal with the tax consequences, and then, you know, and then maybe make some kind of adjustments after the fact, you know, for ongoing. Because I do plan on continuing to work full time for the time being. You know, I think it would be foolish and silly of me to try to, and not to mention detrimental, to try to, I'm going to retire and I'm just going to sit around and find some hobby or something, and that ain't going to work. I need to be doing something, you know, in the form of work. And I have this really bad habit of spending money. So even though I'm saving money, I'm spending money. So anyway, I'm trying to think if there was anything else that was really interesting that went on, you know, because otherwise, you know, I just kind of go about my job and it kind of comes and goes, and there's very little drama, and that's really the way I like it, is as little drama as there possibly can be, and that's generally the way it goes. Some people seem to be surrounded by drama, and if they're not, they sort of stir it up themselves. And I don't see any reason to, I think that's ridiculous. You know, because I think in the end, they simply make themselves miserable when they do that. So, and one of the things that I've been thinking about, you know, why is it that people can actually, you know, get into big arguments and really come to blows, sometimes severe blows, over really, you know, silly things. You know, like, like issues like abortion or, course, even this vaccine thing. The vaccine thing is a great example. You know, how is it that people can get into, you know, something that should just kind of be a more of an academic argument, but then it kind of becomes more than that. Maybe sometimes much more than that. And what I realized that people, even though they think they're being objective and they'll claim they're being objective, the problem is, and this includes the people that claim that they're science-based and they like the, you know, they're scientifically thin, they follow the science. Even those people are their beliefs are based largely on faith. And so people have faith, and this is on all sides, and it's just part of the way the human brain works, the mind works, the human mind works on faith, because the world is far too complicated. And so we have to, what our minds do, is our minds develop functional models, hopefully functional models of how the world works. And if they're successful models, or they're sort of functionally successful, then we're able to kind of negotiate our way through the world and then modify those models as needed. But those models are in large part based on the group that, kind of different group that we belong to. And so then it kind of becomes, depending on your value, your values sort of depend on the group that you belong to. And depending on those values, you can become possessed by ideas, ideological possession. I know there are some people that don't like that idea. That sounds like witchcraft or something, but it's people do get possessed by ideas. It's obvious. So what ends up happening, a lot of our beliefs, you know, our values are sort of tied to the groups that we kind of identify with. You know, those values are sort of tied, you know, and so therefore the ideas that kind of possess us are also tied to those same groups and those same values that we've identified with. So the reason that it can come to blows and people get into real, into some real hostility, the reason that is because their identity is threatened. Now, it's easy to rationalize, you know, and come up with all kinds of rationalizations and things that sound rational, while at the core of it, there's probably some real anger. But the fact of the matter is, it's all faith-based. You know, the scientific method is one thing, but, you know, and that's, you have to, it's logical, and you have to have something that's repeatable, so on and so forth. That's one thing. Scientists, someone that claims that they're science-based, or someone that claims I'm a scientist, and they say all the right words and what have you, maybe have the right clothing and make all the right noises and have all the right smells, you know, and then people think, oh, that's a scientist. It's kind of like a doctor, you know, you see the doctor and the doctor's got his white coat and, you know, and he kind of looked, you know, maybe it's stethoscope around, you know, hanging around his neck and you think, oh, doctor. Looks like a doctor, smells like a doctor, sounds like a doctor, must be a doctor. You know, looks like a duck, smells like a duck, must be a duck. So looks like a scientist, smells like a scientist, must be a scientist. But the problem is that they're people. So I think what happens, like with the science thing in particular, people, you know, maybe they're really enamored with logic and with, and certainly I watch a lot of documentaries and I like science. I like science, the products of science, et cetera, et cetera. But it can easily end up sort of becoming scientist worship. And a good bit of what, you know, people think of as science is really scientist worship. So one of the ones that they really worship in the Church of Science, one of the people that's really has been worshipped is, he's dead now, Stephen Hawking. People, you know, you can hear, you know, when people talk, if it's an older video and he was still alive, when they would talk about him, or they, even after the fact, you know, he's dead and they talk about him, it's like you can see that they worship him, really. Carl Sagan would be another one. You know. And so the problem is that people begin to, you know, they want to be part of the group, feel that, you know, I like science, I want to be part of the group, and so I'm going to talk like they do, and maybe people think that I'm scientific. Maybe people will believe that I'm one of them if I can sort of emulate the way they talk, and you know, in particular, maybe people really think I'm one of them. And I can claim to be one of them. And I can claim that I'm science-based. that applies to not only science. I don't want to just particularly pick on science, but it applies to everything. It applies to all kinds of different groups. You know, any kind of group that you have people that you can name, it applies to. So, but people will come to, you know, once people start coming to, you know, they getting angry, I think that's the litmus test that you can use to determine whether or not their identity is threatened. I think that's the litmus test. You know, and the thing with science, I know they have, well, it's got to be scientific consensus until we can prove it. Or, you know, well, that's all fine and dandy. Don't be making government policy on scientific consensus. That's a really bad idea. Ever hear of flat Earth? Because at one time, not that many centuries ago, people believed, and the official scientific consensus was, that the Earth was flat, and that was, you know, kind of government policy, and you dare not challenge that, you know, at the risk of your own neck being chopped, head being chopped off, or being burned at the stake. So scientific consensus is not the basis for government policy, and it should never be used as government policy. So, but... anyway, this vaccine thing, I'm, you know, just kind of staying out of it. You know, even though I've had pressure, you know, I've had some people try to apply some pressure. And, you know, at this point, I'm, you know, there's been too many, you know, too much pressure applied, and I think... maybe in the last podcast I might have been talking, I don't know if I did or not, I think I might have been talking about, you know, there's this idea, you know, one of the sales techniques, you know, and it's a, you know, it's a sales technique that's been around for years, and it's sort of create a problem or, you know, find a problem and then add, you know, try to make the problem worse. If you can find people that have the problem, see if you can kind of agitate it, make the problem worse, and then offer a solution. And that's a sales technique. And a really great example would be like Hair Club for Men type thing. Because what you want to, you know, you find these men that are bald, and some bald men are really self-conscious about it, for I can't imagine why, but they are. And so find those, and, you know, with your advertisement, and really try to agitate them, make them, you know, show them a picture like a billboard of some bald guy that looks like he's... some kind of nerd from hell, so it's probably a doctored picture. Make him look really bad and like some sort of balding axe murderer. You know, and then the after picture, you know, it's like he's smiling and he looks great and, you know, what have you. You know, you see those billboards like before and after. But, you know, make the people, find the people, make them feel, the vulnerable ones feel self-conscious, offer the solution. at a big price. And I believe that's kind of, I'm not saying that there's ads, you can't take this literally. I'm not saying that there's an advertisement that's done this with the virus and the vaccines, but the net effect is the same of what has actually transpired. I think it's largely the media has done it, but, you know, they jumped on when the virus first came around. Boy, they really jumped on it, you know, and like they kept showing, you know, Italy and all the, you know, the streets were deserted and people were scared out of their minds and the hospitals were full and people were dying and blah, blah, blah. Oh, my God, we're all going to die. So it's going to spread and we're all going to die. Scare the bejesus out of people. And they've done that and done that and done that, and it's gone on and on and on and on and on. And then, oh, now we have a solution. Here's the solution. We've got all these vaccines. This is the solution. You know, and you have to do it. We're going to force you to do it. We're going to penalize you if you don't do it. Sound familiar? You afraid you won't get your promotion if you're bald? You got a bald, you're bald on top. You afraid you won't get your promotion? Or that the girl won't like you? You're going to be left behind. You're going to be socially penalized. Or maybe even financially penalized. So the effect is the same. And so that's a very divisive sales technique. It is a technique, and you will get sales. It will work to varying degrees, but it's not, it's very divisive. And I believe the net effect of what has happened with the virus and then now all the vaccines is the same thing. I'm not saying that there's a literal ad that somebody made that has done that, but what I am saying is that that is the net effect. That's how I see it. That's my opinion. So they've done a really lousy public relations job. And of course, the more they push it, the more resistance they're going to have. And so now I could change my mind tomorrow, but at this point, I'm just not interested in any vaccines. And, you know, the virus may kill me. That's possible. I'm not saying that I'm immune to it. You know, but, there is a virus. But I'm really not sold on the vaccines. And all of this you have to take it stuff is makes me really suspicious. You know, so, you know, and of course they have their rationalizations as to why they're pushing it or why they want to mandate it. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know, you can take your mandate and stick it where the sun doesn't shine. And again, the virus I might catch the virus and end up dying from it. It happens. And if it does, it does. So, I think you're better off. I'm certainly better off, you know, turning all that stuff off. And, you know, it's just, it's all designed kind of that way, you know, agitate and motivate. Agitate, motivate. And that's a proven technique. It's very divisive, but it's a proven technique. You know, if you study communism at all, they had this idea of agitprop. So you agitate and then propagandize. So get somebody upset and you can propagandize them. Because you get someone upset, it's like I talk about, get upset. You absorb the environment around you. Get upset. You got two wrong choices. Either go along to get along or you rebel and do the opposite. Either way, you're not yourself. So the best thing to do is to become as calm as possible. And then when someone tries to the more they try to agitate, whatever it is, the solution is to become even more calm. That's the perfect solution. And pretty much every problem that you could have, if you take that approach, pretty much every problem that you could have solves itself. So this little dilemma that I have with, should I go with a traditional lens or one of these so-called premium lenses? You know, at this point, I'm just taking in information. And I really do believe that at the point that I do the surgery, that all the pressure will be gone and I'll know what to do. And that's sort of the perfect way to handle it. That way things can work out the right way. So, anyhow, I'm still, I'm at this place and I dropped my trailer in a door and they took down my phone number and they had me park over in this other parking area with the tractor, dropped the trailer. And they're going to call me whenever the load is ready, and so I don't have any clue how long that might be. I've already eaten. I ate early this morning before I started driving. And then this afternoon I ate again before I came to the place where I'm picking the load up at. I ate at McDonald's. With no buns, so it was okay. It wasn't great. By the way, a couple of months ago, I bought one of these it's like a battery-operated leaf blower. So I didn't get the cheapest one. It's like a middle-sized model. It's not the most intense one. Sort of a mid-model. I think I paid about maybe $70 for it. And so I bought it a couple of months ago and I've kind of used it around the house to it's great for blowing the plant debris off of the deck and what have you. So it works great for that. So I decided, I'm always having to get the trailers washed out. I don't know, some months ago there I ran across this driver that had bought a battery-operated leaf blower at Walmart. It was like $20, and he was talking about it, and I kind of listened to him, and then I kind of promptly forgot about it. you know, but I'm always having to either sweep the trailers out or spend a great deal of time waiting in line, particularly at Blue Beacon truck washes, to get the trailers washed out. So I thought, when I came back to work, I thought, I'm going to just go ahead and bring that leaf blower with me, which I did. And so I, the trailer, before I left to head to Carthage, Missouri, I went ahead and blew the trailer wasn't very dirty, but it had some debris in it. So I went ahead, even though it was, actually it was dark at that point, it was like 9 something, almost 10 o'clock at night, I blew the trailer out, and then they load, you know, and then took it to Carthage, and then, of course, the next morning they loaded it. And then they unload, you know, when it got unloaded today, I went to that truck stop, a Pilot truck stop north of Fort Worth, and used it again to blow the trailer out. There was more, you know, it was mostly just little pieces of wood, that type of stuff, maybe a little bit of dust or whatever, but a lot of little wood chips. And blew them to the back of the trailer, and then kind of, you know, collected them all in a, you know, trash can and threw them away. So that actually works pretty well. So that may end up saving me quite a bit of time that I would normally spend hanging out in truck wash lines, particularly Blue Beacon truck wash lines. People wait, lines of trucks waiting to get in the truck wash. You know, now sometimes there is no truck wash, and sweeping the trailer out is the only option. So this really works well. It's handy. Sweeping the trailer out can be kind of a pain in the rear. But this is quick. It's more efficient. It works better. And so I'll be doing this as much as possible from now on. You know, just kind of using this blower to blow the stuff to the back, and then I can throw it away and not have to wait in line at truck washes. But if the thing is really filthy and wet, then the only alternative is going to be a trailer wash trailer washout. So that does happen part of the time. So, but there have been plenty of times where I could have swept it out, but I just went ahead and was lazy and didn't really want to mess with the brooming it out, and you know, went to the truck wash and waited in line instead. So, but in any case, this it's a battery operated leaf blower, works really well for that. So I'm really happy about that. So, anyhow, hope everyone has had a great week. Hope you have a great Labor Day weekend. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.